This is Nancy Dwyer
and Rocky Alvey
for Stellar Conversations, recorded at Vanderbilt University's Dyer Observatory. This is part three in our conversations with Dr. Rob Knopp on the expansion of the universe.
Okay, Rob, you've talked about dark energy, and you also mentioned dark matter. What is the difference between dark energy and dark matter?
Okay, yeah, good question.
And why does it matter?
Yes, it always matters. Dark matter and dark energy are extremely different things, except that both the term, quote, dark matter, unquote, and dark energy, unquote, mean the name for that thing that we don't know what it is. Okay. So dark matter, let's start with dark matter, because dark matter, which used to be weird, is now pretty normal in comparison. If you look at galaxies or clusters of galaxies, let's just start with galaxies. A galaxy like our own, it's a big spiral galaxy. All of the stars in the galaxy are orbiting around the center of the galaxy. And we can measure, again, using a Doppler shift, we can measure the rate at which the stars are moving around the galaxy. We can also count up how many stars and how much gas there is in the galaxy just by looking at how much light there is. And also, if there's dust, which is actually not a very big fraction of the mass of a galaxy, but if there is dust, we see it blocking the light of stars, and or if we look in the very far infrared, we can see it. So we can measure all the light we see from all the stars and gas and stuff, and from that light, we can figure out how much gravity there is. And what we figure out is the speed at which the stars are moving is too fast for the amount of gravity there is. They're moving so fast that the gravity of all the stars would not hold those stars into the galaxy. They should go flying off into intergalactic space. So what that tells us is there is something more there holding these galaxies together than all the stuff we can see. And in fact, we've done better than that. We can actually sort of, if you look at different distances away from the galaxy, we can figure how much mass you need where, and we can actually get some rough idea of how the dark matter is distributed. So dark matter is the name for that other mass that must be there that we don't see that holds galaxies together. The same thing happens with clusters of galaxies. Clusters of galaxies, the galaxies are all stirred up, much if you have one of those little snow-filled glass balls where there's a lot of snow, and if you shake it, there's snow particles all kind of twirling around each other. Galaxies are doing that within clusters of galaxies. Again, if you look at the speeds they're moving, the clusters should be flying apart. They shouldn't be held together, and yet they are held together. So there's more mass there than we can see. So the extra mass is called dark matter. Now, we know enough about dark matter to know that it's not concentrated where all the stars are, but it's actually spread out in sort of big halos or big balls, and our galaxy is embedded inside that.
So is the dark matter the strings that you talked about in your analogy of the raisins and bread that hold the raisins?
Yeah, the strings in that case were just gravity, whatever holds it together.
Okay.
But it turns out that the exact number is not really known, but something like 90% of the mass of our galaxy is dark matter. So most of the gravity of our galaxy actually comes from the dark matter and not all the stars and gas and black holes and neutron stars and other things we see. Now, there's one more thing we know about dark matter. Once upon a time, there were a whole bunch of different ideas for what dark matter could be. And the most, to somebody hard-headed astronomer, the most likely one was just very dim stars, be they brown dwarfs, which are stars that sort of failed stars, although don't tell people who work on brown dwarfs I said that, or just very dim stars or maybe planets or maybe free-flying black holes. And the reason that was dark is just because they were not hot enough, too dim to see, and they were just mixed throughout the galaxy, and we just hadn't seen them before. Well, we have done various searches using various different methods, and when I say we, this isn't something I did personally, but we as in humanity, as in other astronomers, have done.
So did I have a part in that?
Yes, you did. It was your tax dollars at work. So for every dollar you paid on your taxes, one atom of 1 cent went towards this work. We've done searches that would have seen those sorts of things. And there are other reasons now we know that dark matter actually can't be normal stuff like dim stars. In fact, it's not even made up of protons and neutrons. It's some strange exotic particle that's there lurking around the galaxies. In fact, it's smooth everywhere. There's dark matter in this room. Not very much of it, because we're on a planet and all the normal matter is really condensed together here. So the dark matter, it's a tiny amount here, but it's spread uniformly throughout the galaxy, and that way makes up most of the galaxy. Now, the thing about dark matter is its gravity is normal. You have more dark matter, you have more mass, it's going to hold things together more strongly. It would tend to make the universe's expansion slow down. Dark energy, in contrast, has negative gravity. If you have more dark energy, you end up having a repulsive gravitational force rather than an attractive gravitational force. Dark energy is a very, very strange, exotic, bizarre material, and that's what's making the universe accelerate.
Is it possible that it, in fact, is not an entity, it's just a basic misunderstanding of the laws of physics?
Yeah, that's entirely possible. That there isn't really a thing that is dark energy, but what this is pointing to is that there is a deeper theory, which I wouldn't say that Einstein's general relativity is wrong, any more than we say Newtonian gravity is wrong. So Newton's theory of gravity is what we use to figure out orbits in the solar system and things like that. But there are a few things that Newton's gravity doesn't predict that Einstein's general relativity does predict. But Einstein's general relativity is the same as Newtonian's gravity in the regions where Newtonian's gravity works. There may be something deeper than Einstein's general relativity that you only see when you look on scales of millions or hundreds of millions or billions of light years that we haven't seen otherwise. So yeah, it may well be that dark energy isn't a thing at all, but a pointer to a deeper physics that we don't understand yet. And we'll find out, I hope.
Okay, so if dark matter is stuff, why can't we collect it?
So it's slightly strange stuff. The normal stuff, when you collect something, you do it one of two ways. One way is put down a bowl and collect rainwater. Well, the reason the rainwater comes down into your bowl is because of gravity. That's one force. Another force that we deal with every day is electromagnetism. Now, we think of electricity and magnets. Stick something on your fridge, there's a magnet. But it turns out the interaction, the way that atoms in our hands and in the natural world interact with each other is primarily through electric or electromagnetic interaction. So all the electrons, if you get two balls close to each other, the electrons start to repel each other. And when they run into each other, you know, there's various quantum mechanical things if you really want to get on the fundamental level. But basically what happens is that the electrons in the atoms all don't want to occupy the same space. And so the balls don't run into each other anymore. Now, here's the thing about dark matter. It doesn't interact via the electromagnetic force at all. It only interacts via a force we call the weak force, and that name is suggestive because it's a weak force. So if a particle of dark matter came, it would just go right through you. In fact, that's happening all the time.
Oh, wow.
It goes right through the Earth. It goes right through you. It's like X-rays. Now, those go right through you because your body is transparent mostly to light at that wavelength. It's almost completely transparent to particles that act only via the weak force. Now, we know another one called the neutrino. We have to build gigantic tanks of Clorox or gigantic tanks of heavy water to detect a handful of neutrinos a day. But if you hold up your thumb, you've got hundreds or thousands, I don't even know the number, of neutrinos going through your thumb every second. They're coming off the sun. This happens. So dark matter particles are much thinner than neutrinos, and they almost never interact, so it's very tough to collect them. There have been experiments that have set up that try to detect various different proposed particles for dark matter, but we don't have any good confirmed detections. Now, there is one other thing we hope to do. The most likely candidate for what dark matter is something called, and wait for this, the lightest supersymmetric particle, or the LSP.
Say that twice.
Yeah, lightest supersymmetric particle. Yeah, do you have a license for that? So at CERN, in a couple of years, they're going to turn on the Large Hadron Collider, which is a big new gigantic particle collider.
This.
Yes.
In Europe?
In Switzerland, yes.
Right, okay.
So it's all made of chocolate. No. So they're going to turn this on and then go skiing. No, they're going to turn on the Large Hadron Collider, and one of the things they're looking for is this physical effect called supersymmetry. One of the properties of supersymmetry, there would be a thing called the lightest supersymmetric particle, which wouldn't decay into anything else. So if you make it, it stays around. Now, these particles are big enough, as far as particles go, that right around here, none have been made since the Big Bang. But that would be dark matter. That is the most likely candidate for dark matter. It's this strange, lightest supersymmetric particle that almost never interacts with anything, but they've been hanging around. And we may make some in a few years, and at that point, we will actually have made and collected some. But it takes massive particle accelerators to make it and massive detectors to collect it.
So if that's true, you're saying that the particles, all the dark matter was made when the Big Bang was...
Yeah. Somewhere early on in the Big Bang. There's all sorts of different weird physical transitions that happen between the Big Bang and now. So one of those would be, I mean, the very, very early universe had a soup of every conceivable kind of particle around. And eventually it gets to the point where the dark matter just becomes stable and just cruises along. And eventually all the hydrogen and helium forms and just cruises along. And eventually, 300,000 years later, all the hydrogen and helium collect electrons and make atoms and then cruise along. And then after that, they start collecting into galaxies. But so the dark matter particle would have been made very early on and has just been cruising along ever since, collecting into galaxies.
You mentioned that time period of 300,000 years after the Big Bang. Is that the point, the furthest point that we'll be able to see?
That depends on your definition of the term see. See, now I sound like a politician. So it turns out when the universe was plasma, which means if you take all the hydrogen gas and you rip all the electrons off of it, so you have free hydrogen nuclei and free electrons, the universe at that time was opaque. So any light that was emitted before then would have been absorbed somewhere else in the universe before the light had time to stream through the universe for 13 billion years and reach us. So see with light, we can't do before that 300,000 years. So that's the earliest that we can see in the sense of looking at with telescopes. On the other hand, we have probed earlier than that. There's a period 10 minutes after the Big Bang, roughly. I don't remember the exact number. It might be 20 minutes.
Give or take.
What's a factor of two in the age of the universe, right? So something like that is when when the first lightest elements formed. Before that, it was all just protons and electrons and neutrons. And eventually, some protons and neutrons collected together to make helium. The ratio of hydrogen to helium is predicted by the Big Bang theory, and we observe that same ratio. So we've actually been able to test predictions of the Big Bang theory before that 300,000 years. So in a sense, we've seen earlier, because we can make measurements that test the effects of things that happened before that 300,000 year boundary, light from before which doesn't reach us.
Does that boundary grow 1 year by 1 light year by every year that passes?
Wow, that's a hard question because there's time dilation and other kinds of stuff, but sure.
Okay.
It is growing, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Rob. You have not only told us about the expansion of the universe, you've expanded our minds.
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. This is Nancy Dwyer.
And Rocky Alvey.
For Stellar Conversations, brought to you by Vanderbilt University's Public Affairs Department and recorded at Vanderbilt Dyer Observatory. For more information about Dyer Observatory, please see our website at www.dyer.vanderbilt.edu.